Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. First, David Blades. He is the president of Retirement Planners International. And we're going to be talking about the benefit of offering financial planning as part of an outplacement package. Second, we're going to be talking to Hook Wheeler. He is the senior human resource manager for the JAXA Laboratories. He's going to be talking about some of the challenges that remote or rural organizations face when trying to hire great talent. David, thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, good morning. A pleasure being on.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, it's funny. I got to see you when you actually came out to the Lincolnshire International Conference here in New Hampshire. And, you know, it was great to meet you and your wife, and I hope you enjoyed the local New England flavor.
Oh, absolutely, especially the lobster flavor that followed.
Oh, we did have plenty of lobster, didn't you? Mmm, yum, yum, yum. That's a good thing. See, now I'm hungry. Now I'm hungry for the show. All right, well, you know, today we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic, and it's maybe something that organizations, people out there haven't really given a lot of thought to. And that is, you know, unfortunately, times the way they are, people have layoffs, people get outplaced. And during that situation, there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of things are happening. And people always ask when that happens at our organization, at CMA, what do I need to do? What are some of the things I need to think about? And companies always say, what can I do that is best for my, you know, my organization, my people? Because look, they want to do the right thing. You offer financial planning through outplacement organizations. That talks about how to really help them move forward. So talk a little about that relationship and why financial planning is important when you're really in these types of situations.
Okay, excellent question. And, you know, first of all, I've been in business 30 years. I've dealt with companies that utilize the services of a fine organization such as yours for outplacement, and I've worked direct with corporations when they have not. And I have to tell you, David, when we meet with the individuals, those that we meet that have come to us through an outplacement firm are so much better off emotionally as well as just being prepared for the time period that they're in versus those that come to us direct from a corporation that's not working with an outplacement firm. So the first thing I really want to stress is to use an outplacement firm because it gives the people a place to go. The people, you know, and David, goes beyond, above and beyond resume development and networking, but they're put into a group where everyone else is in the same boat that they're in. So it almost becomes an emotional support group. So when we meet people through an outplacement firm, they're just in so much of a better frame of mind to begin with. Now, on the financial planning, to answer your question, you know, a lot of times, Dave, when people are let go, while it's very important to understand their benefits, it's important to understand how to put together a good resume and how to properly network and interview, but this is not the first thing on their mind. You know, the first thing on their mind is financial. Am I going to lose my house? Am I going to be able to keep my child in college? Should I cancel my vacation? So what we're able to do is to put a plan around them so that we can reassure them and show them the best techniques to answer these questions that we know they have first and reassure them that they're not going to lose their house. They can keep their child in college, and they can still go on that vacation. And until we can eliminate some of this emotional worry and fear, they're just not going to dial into the things that an outplacement firm is going to be talking to them about, such as resume development.
You're absolutely right. I mean, look, we always talk about the shock, right, the shock and awe of what has happened. Even if you know it's coming, it still doesn't matter. At that point, they're in shock. And, you know, they do think about the fact of, oh, gosh, what am I going to be able to do? How much am I going to have to cut back? What is the financial situation I'm in? And on top of that, they may have a 401k, a simple plan, an IRA plan, a retirement plan. So talk a little bit about, if you could, some of the things that you think that people should know, companies should know, in regards to how they should handle those types of plans. Because, again, all they're thinking about is cash right off, right?
Exactly. And that thought process typically leads to a mistake. Now, how is that? Well, first of all, the HR department has supported 401k plans in their companies to help people prepare for their own future. These employees have not really had the ability to take money out of that plan, but now all of a sudden, due to their termination of employment, that 401k now becomes readily available. So just stop and think about it for a second, Dave. You're in a situation where you're fearful that you don't have enough cash, and then all of a sudden the 401k is put before you. So many people will reach into that cookie jar, they'll take that money out, and not only does it hurt them short term because of taxes and a potential 10% pre-age 59 and a half penalty, but it also hurts them long term because that money that they've withdrawn, as well as the tax money that they sent to the IRS, is no longer in their 401k or IRA. Therefore, they're losing tax-deferred compounding on those withdrawals for the rest of their life. And what's so sad about this, Dave, is that oftentimes we'll look and we'll see that they had cash value available in their life insurance policy. We'll see that they had a line of credit on their house available that they forgot about. Or we'll find cash in checking accounts or savings accounts, and the people will say, well, I didn't want to use that, so I took the money out of the 401k. I wanted to leave that cash available in case I need it later. Well, the 401k is the one that you should be using if you need it later. It should be the last thing you go to and not the first. And I might also add that a lot of people don't understand that the IRS will allow them to actually get their hands on that money without paying the 10% penalty, even if they are age less than 59 and a half. And that's called the IRS 72T exclusion. And again, I'm not going to get into technicalities here, but you brought up, very rightfully so, the 401k. And Dave, we have to say that that's the biggest mistake that we see people make when they leave employment.
We're speaking with David Blades. He's the president of RPI Incorporated. And, you know, David, we're talking about serious stuff for serious situations. And you obviously can't blame individuals when they are in a financial situation to look at a pot of money that is sitting there that is for retirement in 10, 20, 30 years down the road, right? They're thinking, I need it now. And, you know, reality is people think about the now, they don't necessarily think about the future. And that's a fault, but that is a fact. What do you think are some options that individuals can look at and say, hey, you know, what is it that I can do to structure myself now? Because really, people should think about it now before these things happen, that can make sure that they can be ready if something should happen to them or with a situation in employment.
Well, that's an excellent question, and Dave, I couldn't agree more that you can't really blame people. And you know, I actually like you making that statement because it shows me that not only do you have the expertise that you have from your many years of working with individuals in outplacement, but you also are empathetic to them, which is a very unique and very viable combination to have when you're dealing with people when they're under emotional duress. And you're absolutely right. You can't blame them. But some of the options, some things that people can be doing now, they can get a line of credit established on their real estate while they're gainfully employed. Oftentimes, if you go to the bank where you have your primary mortgage, they will do this without cost. They'll give you a checkbook. And Dave, you're not paying a dime of interest on it until you write the check. Now, of course, if you're not a self-disciplined individual and you're going to start writing those checks for emergencies such as cruises and going through Hawaii, perhaps not a good idea.
Oh, wait now. I think that could be an emergency. It depends on how you define it. No, I'm just kidding.
I would have to admit that I agree with you. A cruise or Hawaii could constitute that being an emergency. But, you know, they can start to set themselves up. So, let me give another example. We had a deadly tornado come through our area. It came within about a mile of my house, and I'm sorry to say that there were several fatalities. They told us it was coming in advance. So in advance, I simply prepared. I took some things downstairs and put them around the pool table, knowing that we would be crawling under there if we needed it, and just did some simple things, just some food and some water and a flashlight. Dave, I prepared ahead of time. And that's what I'm seeing that a lot of individuals could do, as you just alluded to with your question. They could get a line of credit in place. Number two, keep the charge card debt down. Keep your debt down. Don't assume that if you're both working that both jobs are going to last forever. Be prepared for the worst. Think ahead. Plan ahead. And I might also add that HR can help people plan ahead. I work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies that will have firms such as yours come in, Dave, not at a time of outplacement, but at a time prior to a time of coaching. And oftentimes the outplacement firm will bring in a financial advisor, and through coaching and financial planning, they will help people put together a financial plan. And as part of that financial plan, there will be emergency contingencies built into it. So not only can individuals plan ahead, HR can plan ahead by offering some of these sessions through an outplacement firm.
No, I think that's an excellent point, and companies may not have thought of things like this. You know, one of the things that organizations say is, we're taking care of our employees because we have a 401k. We're taking care of our employees because we're thinking about, you know, how to make sure that they are getting paid appropriately and benefits are appropriately. But one of the benefits they really could look at is how to help them financially succeed in life. And that's not necessarily something that always is thought of as a benefit. But you bring up an excellent point that is something the company should think about as a benefit.
Yeah, and you know, it actually benefits HR. It doesn't just benefit the employee. Because when we've gone into corporations ahead of time, and we've helped people set up financial plans, and then when and if something happened down the road, not only were those employees better off, but the company was better off because the employees handled it better. HR and benefits received far fewer calls after a downsizing if they had already put some coaching in place ahead of time.
You're absolutely right. And you're listening to Dave Blades. He is the president of RPI International. You are listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and on WLOBradio.com. David, I got to tell you, one of the questions that people always ask when it comes to financial advisors is they say, so why this individual? Why this firm? Why would you partner with a company? Why would you do that? And what is the background that would say this is an organization that can help me? I know you gave a little bit of background on you. Tell me about your organization. Tell me how you can help individuals and give me some certification of what gives you that right to do so.
Okay, excellent question. And I'll also, in that answer with a little bit of how someone can do due diligence on someone if they'd rather work with someone local. We were in Motorola for 15 consecutive years. Every month they would fly in their top level directors and their spouses, and we would do a presentation and then work with them on a one-to-one basis. And the legal department at Motorola would do due diligence on us on an ongoing basis before we would allow, they would allow us in. And the due diligence they did is the same due diligence that any other HR person can do on their own. So we'll talk about some credentials that people should look for, and then we'll talk about how to check them out. Now, I have a master's in financial planning. I'm a certified financial planner. I'm an accredited investment fiduciary and a registered financial consultant, 30 years experience. But you don't need all of that. You can simply put in your zip code and you can find a CFP or certified financial planner in your area by going to the CFP website. Once you end up with, and by the way, I would work with a certified financial planner because a lot of brokers, and I'm not putting them down, Dave, I don't do that, but they're just selling a product. A certified financial planner is more likely to be one that believes in the financial planning process, and an investment may or may not be part of that, but it's more of a planning process. And I might also add that, to my knowledge, there's no specific credential associated for the outplacement world. Now, the outplacement world has several coaching designations that one can achieve. And one thing I've done over the last 20 years in working with outplacement firms is I have gone into the outplacement world and I have achieved those credentials so that I can make sure when I'm talking with someone that comes to me through outplacement that I'm using the same language, the same lingo, and so forth as what the outplacement firm is so that the employee gets a consistent experience. Now, once you find a certified financial planner, that doesn't mean they're okay. You still have to do a little bit more due diligence. And the way that you do that is you can simply go to FINRA, FINRA.org. FINRA is our regulatory agency, Dave. And at FINRA.org, you can go into a broker check section. You can type that individual's name in, and you can see if they've had any disciplinary history. In addition to that, you can go to the CFP website and look for the same. So you always want to do due diligence with someone. The problem is that the outplacement world, working with individuals as they were just outsourced and downsized, that's a real unique niche because the psychic of that individual is different. You know, as an example, if you do look at an investment, well, you have to pick one that has less volatility in it while that person is unemployed because they handle loss different emotionally. And you have to start a financial planning process with someone throughout placement with cash. You know, where's the money? Dave, what was that movie with Tobey Maguire?
Show me the money.
Show me the money? Well, someone in outplacement, that's their frame of mind. Show me the money. So you have to show people where they can go to for cash first. You have to show them what they can do to reduce their cash flow during a period of unemployment. So you have to really look at the financial planning process, but you have to then specialize it down to the psychic and the needs of someone that's coming to you throughout placement. And I don't know of any way to learn that other than just working with those people for several years.
When you're looking at companies that provide these services, and when you're looking at organizations that provide these services, what are key things that you're looking for within that organization that you'll say, hey, these are the type of firms that I'll work with?
An HR department that truly cares about the people. Because a lot of the financial planning, and yes, I will tell you, it does benefit the company, it does benefit HR, because when and if those people are let go, they handle it better. There's less calls going to HR. There's less calls going to benefits. But at the same time, there needs, and I should add one other advantage. When you're doing coaching and financial planning for existing employees and there is no downsizing associated with it, that sends and communicates a message to the employees that we care about you, not only as an employee, but we care about you also as an individual, because a lot of the planning and advice that you're going to get through the coaching is something that you will benefit from after you leave here. So it really sends a strong message to your employees that you care about them. So I guess one of the first things I look for, above and beyond the size of the 401k or the number of employees, is just if we're dealing with some HR individuals that truly care about helping the individuals.
When you're thinking about, hey, this is an individual who has a decent amount of assets. I'm going to flip the coin here a little bit and talk about the individual. Has a decent amount of assets, has a decent amount of maybe retirement. They're in there, maybe mid to late 50s. Unfortunately, that is certainly a market today that's getting hit very hard in terms of layoffs and downsizings. And they come to you and they say, what should I do? I know there's no one size that fits all, but what are some of the things that you tell them, maybe one or two top tips that they can, that you can say, hey, these are things that I tell people they need to think about before they actually go out and make either bad decisions or make any decisions at all?
Well, Dave, great question. You know, what happens is oftentimes an individual will leave a company, they go right to a broker, and in 10 seconds, the broker is showing them an investment for the rollover, and they gobble it up. But yet, if that individual went to a doctor and that doctor recommended a prescription before even examining the patient, I don't think that same individual would be real eager to take that medicine. So the very first thing is to slow down, take a step back, and get a plan in place. You know, what's a plan? A plan is basically what do you have and what do you want out of life? And let's put that together. Let's do a plan to see where you're at and how to get you on track. And it looks at a holistic approach at income tax reduction, perfect asset allocation. You know, what percentage goes in stocks and bonds in order to generate the rate of return that an individual needs. I'll tell you, Dave, in 30 years, when I ask individuals when they come in, how did you choose those investments in your 401k? And how did you decide how much to put in there out of each check? Not a single time in those 30 years, Dave, has anyone ever said, well, I did a plan, and based on my plan, that was the dollar amount that I needed to invest on a monthly basis between now and retirement. And as far as the investments, well, that's the asset allocation that's needed to generate the rate of return my plan said I needed to accomplish all my financial objectives. Not one time. They'll say, well, I just chose that investment because it did great last year. Or I chose it because that's what Tom does, and Tom's really smart. So the first thing I would say is take a step back, take a breath, slow down, put a plan in place, and implement nothing until that plan's in place so that everything that you do implement is part of accomplishing a specific plan tied to your very specific goals and objectives.
You know, you're right on the money. I'm sitting here with a smile on my face. Of course, you can't see that on the radio, but the reality is that that is exactly what people say when they're investing. Either somebody else, I'm doing because somebody else said they did it, and boy, they've made a lot of money, and they're smart. Or, you know, it sounded good. It did well last year. Those are exactly the reasons, exactly the wrong reasons to be investing money. But in fact, that's what they do.
You're right. Everyone has different definitions of risk and risk tolerance. You know, I remember people used to say, well, put me in an investment, David, that will let me sleep like a baby. And then having four kids, I realized I would need to pick something that would make them get up every hour and cry. So everyone has a different outlook at risk tolerance, and that's why it's got to be so specific to the individual. You know, in the individual, you know, it's all got to be about helping the individual. There's advantages to an outplacement firm. There's advantages to the company and in HR, but it's got to be about the individual. And I have to tell you, that's one thing that I really enjoy about working with CMA. I've worked with the majority of outplacement firms in the last 20 years, but the one thing that's just different with CMAs, there's just a caring attitude about let's make sure that we're taking care of the people. And then business plans are put around and put in place to support that, but it starts with that premise. You know, that's a big deal to me, and I really, really respect and appreciate the way that CMA has that in the forefront.
Well, I appreciate that very much, David. And, you know, that's why you've not only become a partner of our local affiliate here, Career Management Associates, but also through the Lincolnshire International platform. And I think it's important for organizations to know that these are some of the great services that can be provided out there. You know, the other thing I know is that you do a radio show in Chicago. I'm going to give you a second as we're wrapping up here. Tell me a little bit about it and tell me what station it's on, because I know that our listeners are always happy to hear about other things that are happening across the country.
Okay, well, it's on WLS. It's a 50,000-watt radio show in Chicago, one of the largest. I'm 58. When I was 16, I used to listen to WLS on my radio, my GTO. So it's been around for a long time. And it's on Saturday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m.
Well, that's great, because then they can switch back over to News Talk WLB, 1310 a.m. for our 10 a.m. show on Saturday. Dave, I got to thank you very much for being on the show today. Appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. We will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
And today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Hook Wheeler. He's the Senior Human Resource Manager at the Jackson Laboratories up in Bar Harbor, Maine. Hook, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Well, you know, we're going to be talking about a really interesting topic today, and this is a topic that not only is relevant here in Maine, but it's relevant really across the country. As I've said before, we're lucky and proud to have over 9,000 people visiting our HR Power Hour website on a monthly basis, and that's from many states across the country. And this topic today, dealing with hiring great talent in remote locations, is really relevant. So I think the first thing I'd like you to do, if you would, is kind of talk about the difficulties that you face in the fact that you're a pristine, very solid organization and world-renowned laboratory, but you still have challenges getting great people up in Bar Harbor, Maine.
Yeah, Dave, we really do, and I think, unfortunately, the difficulty has been growing rather than lessening just over the last 5 or so years, even given some difficulties in the economy. We have been fortunate enough to continue to grow, and in that growth, we really need to bring in new talent often, or the regular change of employees, replace some talent. And we find that, in large part, we find ourselves recruiting out of state, not because that's our goal, because that's the talent, the skills we're looking, particularly in the biological areas, and in IT, are two that really are a challenge. I think a couple key things are, we are, as you know, 3 hours northeast of Portland. And when people are looking at coming here, even when the job opportunity, given the challenges, the opportunity to build a career, we, because we're rural, face some of those relocation things with spouses. Second incomes can be difficult to make that happen in the way they want to. Relocation to a new home, it's not a place someone commutes to from next door. The downturn of real estate. This is just sort of a couple indications. I could probably go on way too much that has caused us to, look hard. We spent a lot of time, and I think filling a lot of our key roles takes certainly more time than we wanted to and needed to.
You know, let's break this down a little bit if we can. We'll talk about a couple areas, and then we'll get into the positive side, obviously. But I want to kind of talk about some of the individual challenges. So first, when you're putting a position out there, right? You're put out a position that you're looking for something or someone. What is the response you're getting initially? Are you seeing, as some employees have said, hundreds of resumes coming in, or are you just seeing, a smattering of the resumes based upon the unique nature of the industry?
Dave, we're seeing both, actually. Let me qualify that. When we're looking, for example, for a some new technologies, new skill sets in the world of information technology, our response when we put something out there will be not in the hundreds, certainly in the dozens, and then we get down to qualified folks, it may be a few. When we are putting out a ad for someone, let's say in the biological sciences, that's where we've cut our teeth for 85 years, that's what we're all about, we often will get those hundreds of applications and responses, some of which will certainly, it'll winnow down when they do discover where we're located in some respects. But still, we do fairly well with some very talented biological people because that's been our history and our presence in the workplace, and it's been what we've done.
Okay, so you're getting some qualified candidates.
You're
getting candidates that come in. So then the next logical question from my standpoint is, let's talk about the pay. I mean, the reality is, and was, you know, are you paying what you would consider mid-market, at-market? And I'm obviously not going into each specific field, but in general, you're the biggest employer in the town. You're obviously paying at a reasonable rate for the area and market, correct?
Yeah, great, great question. We are paying a reasonable rate for this area and for those in the market in this area. We have a reputation for paying very good salaries along with excellent benefits. You know, our total compensation is looked at in the state of Maine as being enviable, if you will. But it brings up, as I said at the start of the conversation, when we're looking beyond the state of Maine, even southern Maine at times, certainly Boston, to bring that talent here, we really are finding the need to, we're in a different market. And certainly, from what I can see, particularly if you take information technology, primarily the market in Boston for that talent is certainly going to pay a premium over those that we're going to find in Maine.
So we're talking about a, if you want to call it, an organization that is getting applicants, that is paying at or above market for what it is that we're dealing with. So now we're starting to see some of the difficulties. So now is housing. Housing, you know, market housing, apartments, location on the coast. Let's be honest. You know, that is a beautiful place to be. And then, of course, in the winter, if you love snow and ice, it's a beautiful place to be. But you got to like the outdoors, right? You got to have that kind of mentality in terms of being able to understand that you're in a remote place. And that's where some of the rubs start to happen, correct?
You know, I think it does. We just did a recent survey of a group here who have relocated here and begun employment in the last 3 years, actually IT people, to get some feedback on the process and coming here. It's a very mixed bag on those that wanted to be in a rural area, those that didn't care, and those that really would love to be here. So it really goes across the spectrum. What I find is there's much more here actually year-round than meets the eye to the applicant. You got to discover it. Housing, you mentioned at the start, Dave, is definitely a premium here. Housing on the island is 15 to 20% more than just off the island. So we probably rival certainly the housing market, what you'd pay in Portland. And you can live off the island much cheaper. That's not always apparent until people start to dig into what the opportunities are. So at first blush, we might look expensive, rural, and is there enough to do in the winter, to your point? And I think one of our biggest challenges, and we try to muster even more and more capabilities and thought process about this, is to help applicants understand there's more than meets the eye necessarily. There's places to live if that's your choice or that's your income level off the island. The commute is easy. It's beautiful. There's not a lot of traffic lights. And there's actually quite a bit to do in the winter here. Two biological laboratories, one college, and a very active population of about 10,000. So, but here I am already feeling like I'm marketing here, Dave.
Well, you are. In a sense, this, you know, you are marketing. Let's be honest. I mean, this is part of what organizations and companies need to think about when they're trying to sell themselves to potential customers or clients, right? These are your employees, are those very important assets to you. And, you know, you want to bring them on. You want the right talent. You want the right mix. One of the things that, you know, we're talking about, not only now that we've gone through the location, we've gone through kind of the pay, we've gone through, you know, where we're at, you know, is the spouse, the children, You know, I remember talking to people in terms of the organization saying, you know, oh, you're from a metro area. Your wife really enjoys shopping at large metropolitan shopping malls. Have you been to downtown Bar Harbor? There are a lot of shops. Of course, in the winter, there's about 10 open, but that's all right. You can get some shopping done online, right? I mean, are these some of the things you hear, not only from the candidates, but their importance of their spouse, their children? Let's be honest. If you may love and want to go there, but if your spouse doesn't want to go, hey, you're not coming.
That's really true. And so our we try to deflate some of those major concerns by suggesting being in Ellsworth, Maine, which is off the island, 25 miles from Bangor. And Bangor is not a shopping mecca, probably, but there's quite a bit to do and quite a bit there. But, you know, we're realistic, and we're realistic with applicants. We're not going to offer a lot what you can get Portland, Maine, and south. It's interesting with the Internet. Yeah, online shopping is huge in this island. You know, FedEx and UPS are real busy. And, you know, we got the opera piped into the Grand Auditorium in Ellsworth now every Sunday, and it's packed, standing room only. So there's a lot of self-made culture here. But at first blush, you may come here going, my gosh, I've got this beautiful colored plywood on the windows in January. Is how long is this going to last when do things open up? And that's part of the, I think I call it the, seven-part sort of knowing if you're ready to move to Bar Harbor and take a job here. I think what I find, Dave, is, and this is a generalization, those people that are really interested in the opportunity career-wise, whether biologists, information technologists, or administrators like myself, I think we present and offer some really challenging work. We're very collegial. We're very much a community here, I think influenced by the ruralness and sort of we're all in this together. And that attracts a lot of people into some of those, I'll call it infrastructure challenges, like some boarded up windows in town, become less of an issue, certainly for the employee here. But to your point, I think we still, the bigger challenges with, if you will, commonly called the trailing spouse, is to provide the same type level of career challenge that they may have had in that metro area. And unless they're biologists, that can be tough to do in this rural area, or if they want to travel to Bangor.
No, I think you're right. I mean, look, there is no doubt that any of these rural areas we're talking about are beautiful areas of the country, and they lend to a culture that is hard to match in some other areas of the country. You know, you have metro culture, but some of these scenic cultural areas that are all across the country in all states that bring a unique culture to it. And that's what you're really selling as well, is that culture side, not only of the organization as part of the culture, but really as, hey, this is what you're coming into. We are all in it together, and that makes a difference in terms of why you should come to work here.
And I think that's not novel, but we can differentiate enough. Many of our applicants are coming out of situations where there's just been recent downsizing or buyouts. They were in a place in their home working a career, and there's been some, you know, business changes which happen on a routine basis, and all of a sudden they're picking up and going somewhere else. We have historically and continue to offer some more stability for a career. Certainly that can be challenging when people are used to being making changes. They ask, if I come to Bar Harbor, where might I change? And we try to reinforce the stability we have. And, you know, I think that we're talking culturally, two big sellers these days for folks, besides the stability and challenge of employment, what gets brought to my attention is two things. People right away ask about schools. Public schools are in everybody's, I think, you know, front window these days. They really want to know about them. We offer some fantastic schools, really good, highly supported by the community, and have been for years. We're fortunate. And it's a safe place. And those two things might have been minor in years past, but good public schools and safe environments, it's interesting how much that's been sort of the final seller for somebody that was coming into the right career. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. And look, we're talking with Hook Wheeler. He's a senior human resource manager at the Jackson Laboratories. You're listening to Hook Wheeler, senior human resource manager at the Jackson Laboratories, and I talking about the challenges when you're dealing with remote locations and getting great talent. And Hook, we're really talking about some of the challenges, spousal issues, location issues, cultural issues, the challenges with getting great talent. What I want to do is talk about some of the successes that you have had, because what I want to do is kind of share this with other HR professionals out there that are dealing with the challenges of this type of location, this type of issue. So probably one of the first questions I have before we get into a couple of the things you've done, one of the questions come up is when an HR professional is looking to interview candidates, okay, and then talking to them, there's a lot of questions you can't ask. You can't really ask about the spouse. You can't really ask about certain things about that individual. How do you try to determine if they're right for your type of organization?
That's a great question, Dave. I think that, and often people will notice we're different location or something, and they're often not sure how to even ask us about our differences that they notice. And I find it's just conversations about asking people what they think, how does the day struck them, what stood out for them. I find that interviewees of all types, all levels, no matter what discipline they're coming up here to talk to us about, are usually very out front and start asking us about issues like location, transportation, housing. So it's really not difficult to get into those conversations appropriately, lawfully. And I found often it happens when you're walking between interviews, taking a little tour, doing lunch. That's probably what strikes others too. But I think we have an advantage in a sense. This might seem ironic, the fact that we are sitting here. We have about 27 buildings on this hillside, the bottom of a mountain. It really surprises people, and they tend to be fairly forthcoming and pretty informal, and we are very relaxed. And that I think it makes it easy for an HR person. So anyway, is that helpful?
Yeah,
that
no, that's good. I think, you know, look, you have to make the person comfortable, right?
Yeah.
And through that, it is okay to have dialogue around the realistic challenges that are out there. And I think that's the thing that is a takeaway, is have realistic conversation about the situation. And you can't ask certain questions, but you can certainly say, hey, look, I know you may have thought about the fact that, hey, you know, we're in a remote location. How does that affect you? Well, let me tell us how others have talked about these things, and kind of open up the conversation.
Exactly. And, you know, we tend to be a very welcoming organization. We look at just talent. We are not particularly concerned with some of the trappings that some other organizations may be because of a certain look or sort of a marketing they need from those people. People here are serious workers, serious technologists, and a lot of that isn't even an issue. It's really, can you make the transition? There's all kinds of appropriate ways to talk about that. And again, we find it pretty easy to talk about, because if people are impressed with the opportunity, they right away want to say, okay, this is a little different. I'm going to start to bring up some of the issues and talk about them.
No, that's great.
That makes it easier for us.
No, that's great. All right, so let's talk about some of the successes that you've had in terms of dealing with this issue. And one of them is dealing with and partnering with local universities and colleges. So take me through some of that success.
Here's, I think, it's rooted a lot in our summer student program, which is actually older than the laboratory, 90 years old. Our first director used to do this out of his home in Trenton, Maine. And because we're known as a genetics institution, a premier one, we get a lot of interest from entry-level biologists, particularly for our summer student program. We're very competitive. They live in a beautiful mansion here and do work in individual laboratories. The word gets out, and we get hundreds of applications for that and select a few each year. So that's not one college dependent, but we get many kids from University of Maine, Bates, Bowdoin, Colby, will come each year to the sort of a very premier program. Also, the local colleges in Maine and New England, we find there's a lot of very interested technicians. They may come here for 2 to 3 years before graduate school. That tends to be 2 out of 3 of our technicians. They come here gladly year-round. They get some great career opportunity. They get publications. They have what they need to go to graduate school. I think because we have been a biological, really sort of a mecca for genetics and for animal models and stuff, biologists will come here, if not permanently, for a stint, and that's an unusual discipline, happily, and gaining this knowledge. So the local colleges have been great at sending people. We go to their career fairs routinely every year. And that's been the biological sciences, where we've needed to make more effort and make more connections, is, as an example, in information technology. So we benefited from Project Login out of Portland last summer. That was great. People reached out to us, actually, and other companies in Southern Maine. We've doubled our internship opportunities just to be able to make sure that we are recognizable in Project Login, which is there to bring young adults back to Maine, at least for summer experience, so they may work here year-round eventually. Those that have grown up here may have gone to school out of state. And right now we've been talking to local colleges, Hudson, University of Maine. We've got some new connections, and they're also recognizing the need to educate more information technology people because the jobs are here. The jobs in Portland, the jobs in Bangor, they're here, and they're looking for more talented people with more technical background too. So I think we've got some real work to do in information technology, and we've got to continue to capitalize on all our biological internships. We're going to be actually creating a longer than a summer program, which we have. We're going to have some more year-round internships, which are going to be funded for next year, probably in information technology. So that's our current thinking. We're recognizing we've really got to build some talent on the bench at the beginning. We've tended to hire more senior people to get the job done. But you know what, Dave? They tend to be the people that have more obligations where they are in their own home, and they've got to sell something, they've got to relocate. If we can catch them while they're young and get them here and get them indoctrinated into the Jackson Laboratory, what the opportunity is, they often come back.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a great facility. It's a great organization. One of the other things I know you do is partner with other organizations in the area. You know, you said that there's two laboratories, there's a university, you have a college. Tell me about how that partnership works in being able to attract talent to the area.
Yeah. There's these EMBRE grants, which are funded by National Institutes of Health. We have a lot of NIH money here, but they've also looked to fund those states which have less than what might be their share of federal monies. We've done well at the laboratory here, but we've been one of the few places that garnered a lot of that NIH money. So we, because of the federal government, they partnered up ourselves with MDI Biological Laboratory, University of Maine, Bates, Bowdoin, Colby, Maine Research Center is part of Maine Med. So the seven institutions now are bound by a grant opportunity, and we share graduate students. This started about 7 years ago. We have a graduate program. It comes out of the University of Maine, but they can work at any of the seven institutions. And it's created a lot of collaborations and certainly a lot of opportunities for grad students in biology. That's one thing that's happened.
Well, and I think that's unique, too, because, you know, a lot of organizations are concerned about talent being at more than one location. I mean, they're like, you know, I don't know, they might share ideas, thoughts. We kind of have our own thing going on. So I think that's a unique example of how collaboration can work between, look, seven organizations in that case.
I think it's really insightful of you, and I think that's what the federal government sometimes, in their wisdom, really wants to get people collaborating, because that's where you get new ideas, that's where you get creative thinking. And yet, sometimes it challenges some of our thinking about proprietary information, proprietary ideas. But this is truly, we have a lot of grad students and, by extension, their faculty members working together, training young folks, and then taking ideas from there. It's worked really well. Continues to be funded, small and large places. We share students. They get an opportunity to pick where they want to go, and it's been working well.
All right, no, I think you're absolutely correct, Hook, and that is, you know, some of the challenges that are out there. This helps alleviate some of those challenges and thoughts, and it does take new ways of thinking. You know, we have about 2 minutes here left, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about your organization, your uniqueness to not only Maine but New England. You have a new facility now in Connecticut. I think it's important for people to understand. It's not very often we put on such a prestigious institute on the radio, and I think it's important for you to talk about the uniqueness of your brand and your institute.
We've been here, as I said, been in Bar Harbor for about 85 years, and we're a genetics research, basic research institution trying to discover those genetic components that affect particularly disease. That's been our moniker, our tagline for a long time. And with the really expansion We're not leaving Bar Harbor. We're not leaving Maine. Actually, we're going to be in Ellsworth also. But with our expansion of Farmington, Connecticut, it really is something that many, many, and most basic research operations are doing. Usually they do it in a metro area. Let's say if you're Harvard, you're partnering with your hospitals to do some clinical work, too, and inform the clinicians. So Farmington has given us opportunity at what we call Jack's Genomic Medicine to take a lot of that genetics information, that understanding of the mouse as a research model, and we're going to be partnering much more directly with physicians at, we're on a location with three hospitals, just us at Hartford right now, close relationships with Yale. But bottom line, it's a 75 people right now, it'll grow to 300 in Farmington, Connecticut. And they're folks who are taking all that great information, that data that's been discovered in the biological sciences over the last 40 years, and mine that data primarily, look at certain situations as far as people's health. The tagline is personalized medicine. Now that we can understand, Dave, yours or my whole genome, right? We can now look at, we know the genes, how do they function? So genomics really is, and I'll just give you this little line. It had me look at this morning, knowing we were going to have this phone call. So really what genomics is just, we know the genes, it's looking at the gene functions, getting in there, looking at the cellular functions, and that's what's happening down there. We've already got some, I think, effective, interesting collaborations with University of Connecticut Health Center, and we're actually going to have 10 shared faculty members between UCHC and Jack's Genomic Medicine. So it really is, I think, the future of where we needed to go in tandem with what's going on here, basic research in Bar Harbor.
I want to thank you for being on the show today. I mean, anybody who wants to know more about Jackson Laboratory can go certainly to jax.org. That's jax.org. Or they can, of course, go after the show to the hrpowerhour.com, in which we will have, obviously, this segment up live that people can listen to again if they miss part of it, or they can certainly connect and go directly to the website to where you are hooked. Hook, thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate it very, very much.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the time.
All right. And now your HR tip of the week. Pre-employment and employee testing. The EEOC has offered the following guidelines for employers on employment tests and other selection procedures. 1. Employers should administer tests and other selection procedures without regard to race, color, national origin, sex, religion, age, 40 or older, or disability. 2. Employers should ensure that employment tests and other selection procedures are properly validated for the positions and purposes for which they are used. 3. If a selection procedure screens out a protected group, the employer should determine whether there is an equal effective alternative selection procedure that has less adverse impact, and if so, adopt the alternative procedure. And 4. To ensure that a test or selection procedure remains predictive of success in a job, employers should keep abreast of changes in job requirements and should update the test specifications or selection procedures accordingly. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Dan Rose. He is the chair of the Labor and Employment Department of the law firm of Drummond & Woodsum. We are going to be talking about privacy, the expectation of privacy, why employers need to care about it, having to do with hiring, misconduct, theft, and making sure that you're doing the right things when it comes to video, GPS, medical records, ADA. Lots of acronyms, lots of fun on the HR Power Hour next week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.